So good morning everyone and welcome back to CKSL, and today the topic is shamatha practice. So shamatha practice, of course, is the practice of cultivating a calm, clear, focused mind, most often translated into English as the calm abiding practice. So today we'll have four sessions. We'll have two sessions this morning with a short tea break in the middle. 1 o'clock is lunch, so 1 till 2 lunch, and then we'll have two afternoon sessions with a short break in the middle, again, tea break, and finishing at 4:30 today. So we're going to have a mixture of theory and practice and a little bit of feedback and Q&A as well. So what I'd like to do is to start with a short meditation. So if you'd like to make yourselves nice and comfortable. So as an act of loving kindness for yourself, letting go of any external distractions, simply allow your awareness to descend into your body, filling the entire space of your body, simply becoming aware of sensations throughout the body. And if you notice any areas of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use your out-breath to relax and release that tightness or tension. Then bring your awareness to the area of your face and soften and relax all the muscles in the face, mouth and jaw soft and relaxed, and all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. In this way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease. And then we can take 3 slow, deep breaths, maintaining awareness of sensations throughout the body as you breathe. And then simply allow your breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Not trying to control or regulate the breath in any way. Simply allowing it to flow naturally, effortlessly. And relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. And with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen. Letting go of any hopes or fears, worries or concerns about the past or the future. Giving yourself permission to let go of all of these things for the duration of this short meditation. Simply allow your mind to come to rest in the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body, wherever you most distinctly notice any sensations associated with the breath. Now narrow your focus and simply focus on the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen, noticing the sensations of the rising and lowering of the abdomen as you breathe. And maintaining an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen, through throughout the entire cycle of each in and out breath. If you find yourself becoming distracted, then without getting upset, the first thing to do is simply to relax. Then release the distraction and very gently return to focusing on the breath. So relax, release, and return. Or if you find that you're simply becoming dull or spaced out, then we can refresh our interest in the practice and then restore our attention on the breath and retain an ongoing flow of mindfulness of the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen. So refresh, restore, and retain. So shamatha practice is the practice of developing a calm, clear, focused mind. So with a calm, clear, focused mind, of course we'll be much more effective in everything we do in our life. Much more effective at work and at play. our minds will be more peaceful and calm. Less agitation and stress. We'll have better mental balance, less caught up in agitation, craving, anger, jealousy, and so forth. And instead of being the slaves of our mind, simply tormented by our thoughts and emotions and memories, we'll become the masters of our mind. And we'll also be able to enjoy the simple pleasures in life much more than we do now. And of course, with a calm, clear, focused mind, all of our other meditation practices will become much more effective. We'll be able to much more effectively cultivate loving kindness and compassion for ourselves and others. And in particular, our Vipassana practice will be much more effective. We'll be able to more easily penetrate the nature of reality, to come to realize the nature of reality, and thereby overcome all of our mental afflictions and suffering. So, keeping these benefits of the shamatha practice in mind, set the best possible motivation you can for being here today. And then simply release all appearances and allow the mind to come to rest. Simply resting in awareness itself. Simply be present. Then we can slowly end this meditation. and begin our discussions together today. So let's begin with a short review of some of the things we talked about last night regarding the shamatha practice. So remember, shamatha is a level of concentration or samadhi that we're trying to develop in the spiritual path. Most, and in Tibetan, of course, shamatha is shine, in English, often translated as calm abiding. So we're trying to develop this single-pointed concentration, develop this calm, clear, focused mind. And generally in this practice, there are two qualities that often are mentioned in the text as what we're trying to develop in this practice. And that's the quality of stability and the quality of clarity. So stability, of course, remember, is to have a stable mind, a mind that does not become distracted. So the fault we're trying to overcome there in cultivating stability is overcoming the fault of distraction. But not only do we want to be able to have a stable mind, we also want to have a clear mind, to be able to focus on the object in a very clear way. So that's the second quality of clarity. So of course what's stopping us from developing clarity is dullness of mind. But yesterday evening I added a third quality that we are trying to develop, one that's not often mentioned in the meditation texts, and that is the quality of relaxation. Because I think in the old days people were generally pretty relaxed, so it didn't really need to be emphasized very much. But unfortunately in our modern society that's not often the case. Many of us lead very hectic, fast-paced lives, full of agitation and stress and tension in our lives. So our minds tend to be very tight and tense and agitated. And so we tend to bring this into meditation practice. And so then in this practice in particular, when we're trying to focus on an object such as the breath, our minds tend to be very turbulent and chaotic, easily distracted, and we tend to feel that the problem is we're not trying hard enough. We need to try harder. We need to focus more intensely. And so we keep clamping down more and more and more on the object. And maybe that can work a little bit, but it comes at a huge cost. A very huge cost of agitation, tension, and a lot of fatigue and tiredness. And even sometimes people complain about getting headaches from meditating. So this is not the approach we want to engage in here. It's not going to work. In fact, as a beginner, probably most of the problems that you experience in meditation is that you're simply trying too hard, you're too tight, you're too tense. We need to relax, 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 relax. So this is the first quality we need to develop. Then with a relaxed mind, we can work on stabilizing the mind. Then with some stability of mind, we can improve on improving the clarity of our attention. So we need to work on them sort of in this order. And then yesterday evening we also looked at, well, what objects should we use for this concentration practice? Because we have to pick an object to focus on. And in the meditation texts, many different objects are mentioned. Often in the Tibetan tradition, particularly in the Lam Rim approach to practice, often it's recommended a mental image of a Buddha. Many advantages with using this, but I think many of us who've tried this find it extremely difficult. It's a very complex visualization, and many of us have difficulties visualizing in general. But one object that is fairly universally recommended in all Buddhist traditions is the breath. And often in the text it says that, you know, if you're the sort of person who's highly discursive, always thinking, 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 then definitely the best object for you is the breath. Because the breath is physical, so by focusing on it, it gets us out of our conceptual discursive mind and into the body. And most of our conceptual thinking is about the past and the future. And this sort of conceptual thinking, living in the past and future, is just really the source of a lot of unnecessary unhappiness. So by focusing on the sensations of the breath, So they, of course, only happen in the present moment. It gets us out of the past and the future into the present moment. So for probably the vast majority of us, the breath will probably be the best object to use in the shamatha practice. And within the breath practice, we saw yesterday evening, there are a couple of variations of that. One is to just notice sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breath. This full body approach, very helpful for in working with relaxation. So if we find that we're the sort of person who's very uptight and tense and agitated, maybe that's a good place to start and just emphasizing relaxation. Then, of course, there's the variation of focusing on the area of the abdomen as we did in this last meditation. That's quite easy to focus on. Therefore, that's good for improving stability of attention. And then in the next meditation, later we'll be looking at focusing on the area at the entrance of the nostrils. Much more smaller object. Because of that, it really helps us to improve clarity of attention. So we have these variations of the breath practice. And then two other objects we looked at briefly last night that I think are very helpful, can be very beneficial for us, particularly in our modern society. The second object there was the mind itself, which is what we're going to look at in the next session. And there, of course, the object is our own mind, so we're simply observing our own mind. And then, of course, all the any mental events that arise in our mind, any thoughts and emotions and memories and so forth. So in this practice, we're simply learning to be able to become the observer or witness of our mind. Now, of course, we're not very good at doing that. Our big habit is, of course, as soon as a thought or emotion comes up in our mind, we identify with it, we follow it, we get caught up in our stories, and they often overwhelm us. And then also often if we have some mental event come up, some thought, emotion or memory, particularly negative ones, we don't know how to deal with that, then often we just try to suppress them, stuff them back down. That of course doesn't help. It just means that we often end up with a lot of physical problems because of that, and we often project a lot of this negativity onto the people around us. So both getting caught up in our mental stories and trying to suppress them really means we are the slaves of our mind. So with this second practice of observing the mind, we'll become the masters of our mind, simply being able to observe and witness all these mental events without getting caught up in them. And if we can do that, of course, we're not feeding those habits, and you'll find that our mind will naturally become more still and quiet as well. So we'll be looking at that practice in the next session. And then in this afternoon, the last session this afternoon, we're going to look at this practice often called shamatha with no object, or sometimes called awareness of awareness practice. It is simply resting in awareness itself. This is much more subtle practice. Often people find this quite difficult. And one of the reasons that people find it quite difficult is that we always want to do something, you know. What am I focusing on? What am I doing? Whereas in this awareness of awareness practice, it's not so much a practice of doing anything. It's rather a practice of being. And that's something that most of us are not so familiar with, just being present. We always want to do something. So that's why people find it quite difficult, because they're trying to do something. And then, of course, by doing it, they're not in the practice. But again, we're going to look at that practice in the last session this afternoon. Also, a lot of advantages in this practice, because this practice will enable us to really develop a very open, spacious mind, and also to remain in that stillness in the midst of a lot of appearances in daily life. And I think that's very helpful. It gives us a very much grounding effect, that we can really be quite still and grounded amongst all the things that are going on in our life. And also it's a very good bridge into the Vipassana practice. But again, we'll look at that this afternoon. And then we looked at the tools we use in this practice. Two main tools: mindfulness, introspection. So to continue on with that, if you'd like to get your handouts again, and I don't know if there's any spare ones. If someone hasn't got any from yesterday, then if you'd like to grab a handout there. So we're going to be looking at the second sheet here, the shamatha, but particularly we're going to look on the reverse side of the sheet. And there's a table up the top here which talks about the faults and the antidotes. And then above that, the sentence at the very top says, shamatha is attained by progressing through the nine stages. The nine stages are the nine diagrams on the front, which we'll be briefly looking at this afternoon. So shamatha is achieved by progressing through the nine stages, relying on the eight antidotes to abandon the five faults. So let's have a brief look at these faults here of practice. So if we look in that little table there at the top, we see that the first fault is laziness. Now, of course, this is a very common fault in general, and particularly here in the shamatha practice, because often what happens is people try to focus, for example, on the breath, and then they're trying to focus on the breath, and then they get bored with that because it's very boring. Because normally our attachment's going, I want something exciting, I want something bigger, better, different. So after a very short time, we try this and we go, well, this is pretty boring, nothing's happening, and we just give up. And so that's quite symptomatic in daily life. If we find no benefit in some activity, we're going to be very lazy when it comes to doing it. We're not going to want to do it. So generally here in the shamatha practice, if we find ourselves being very lazy with this practice, it's simply because we have not really appreciated the benefits of the practice. So therefore it's very important to really reflect on these benefits of the practice and to realize that this practice is going to bring us enormous benefit. And if we can really understand that, we will have the first antidote that's mentioned here, faith. So faith here is having faith in the practice of shamatha, understanding the benefits of the practice. We have faith that this practice will really bring us a lot of benefit. And if we have that faith that it will bring us benefit, then we'll have the second antidote, aspiration. We'll want to do the practice. We'll have aspiration to do the practice. And then if we have aspiration to do the practice, we'll have the third antidote more easily. That is effort. We'll put effort into the practice. And then by putting effort in the practice, we'll slowly start to get the fourth antidote, pliancy. Pliancy here is talking about serviceability, flexibility of body and mind. Now, when we want to do any activity, particularly the shamatha practice, we tend to have a lot of resistance in the body and the mind to doing the practice. But the more we put effort into it, the more our mind and body both will become very flexible and serviceable, and they won't have that so much resistance to doing the practice. So this is, pliancy is something that will slowly develop over the stages of our practice. And then we see in the second fault here is forgetfulness. So forgetfulness here can mean forgetting what to do, what's the practice and how to do it, but also, of course, here forgetting the object. So as we see here, the antidote to that is mindfulness. So again, the main tool in this practice is the rope of mindfulness, to remember the object. So again, mindfulness here within Buddhism is defined, it's a mental factor of not forgetting the object, remembering the object. So through mindfulness, we can remember, we can hold the object without forgetting it, without becoming distracted. But then what happens is we have these other two main faults. Number three, laxity and excitement. Laxity is the technical word for dullness, and excitement is the word used often for distraction. So we have these two main imbalances of practice: our mind becoming agitated and distracted, or our mind becoming very dull and lethargic. So, of course, we need a way of recognizing this. So the antidote to this is introspection. So introspection here is sometimes translated as vigilance. So this is what's called quality control. So this is monitoring our mindfulness, How is our mindfulness going? Are we still on the object, or are we starting to become very dull or starting to become distracted? So the antidote to laxity, excitement or dullness and distraction is introspection, to notice these things when they arise. And then when we do notice them, then simply to reapply mindfulness, to refocus on the object. Now, on that point, and I briefly mentioned this in the meditation we just did, is that often our tendency is that when we become distracted, we often get upset with ourselves, and then we think, I got distracted because I wasn't trying hard enough. I have to try harder. I have to focus harder. So we tend to get upset, get back, and really clamp down on the object more forcibly because we think that's what we need to do. But this is not going to work. It's just going to make us more frustrated, more agitated, and it's going to create a lot of unnecessary fatigue and tiredness. So if we find ourselves distracted, the first thing we need to do, of course, is not get upset, because we will get distracted. That's our habit. So the first thing we need to do is simply relax. To reverse our tendency of this automatic tightening tension when we get distracted. We automatically just tense and tighten to come back. We don't want to do that. So the first thing is just simply relax. Then simply release the distraction. So, of course, release here means simply let it go and just come back to the object. So, of course, this does not mean try and push it away. Because if we're trying to get rid of the distraction, this is aversion. So through having aversion and going, go away, you're just going to get more agitated. And, of course, then you're actually focusing on the distraction. It's going to stay there. And I think we know all that from our experience. If we have some unwanted thing coming up in our mind and we try and get rid of it forcibly, it usually gets bigger and bigger and it creates more problems. So we don't want to do that. We simply release just means, basically it just means come back to the breath. So then we just simply come back to the breath. So we just simply relax. Release, return. Relax, release, return. Just keep doing that very gently. Then, of course, the other imbalance or distraction, which usually in the text is termed excitement, as we see here in the handout. The other, of course, imbalance is dullness. And the technical word we see in the text for that is laxity, our mind becoming very dull, not being able to focus on the object clearly. Of course, very heavy dullness. The extreme of dullness is we simply fall asleep in meditation. That's heavy, heavy dullness. So again, often one of the main reasons we start to become dull in the practice is we're simply losing interest in the practice. So therefore, often then, if we notice that we're becoming dull because we're not so enthusiastic anymore, then we need to refresh our interest in the practice. Again, typically by understanding the benefits that we will receive from doing this practice. And then, of course, we need to then restore our attention on the object, so reapply mindfulness. And then not simply restore our attention on the object, but retain this ongoing flow of mindfulness. So these are a couple of little catchphrases you can use in the beginning stages to help overcome these two imbalances. Also with these imbalances, what can be very helpful, because particularly if we're using the breath as the object, is that we can do this balancing act, because what happens in the meditation is we tend to start to go one of those ways. We tend to start to get just caught up in distraction, or we tend to start to move towards dullness. So to help us balance between these two imbalances, we can do this on every breath, particularly if we're, of course, using the breath as the object. So on the out-breath is a natural time to relax. So what you can do on every out-breath is simply relax, release any distractions, and then return if you've become distracted. Whereas the in-breath is more naturally a time to sharpen the focus. So therefore, we can sharpen our focus on the in-breath, overcoming dullness or laxity. So on the out-breath, relaxing, releasing, overcoming any distraction, and on the in-breath, then arousing, refreshing, sharpening our focus on the breath. So we can do this balancing act on each breath. So in fact, one cycle of a breath can then become a complete meditation. And then we can stay in that sort of balanced state. So any questions so far on this or any of the faults we've covered so far? Yeah, so here introspection is, we are not, introspection of course is, you know, in modern psychology is often called metacognition or something very similar. And of course that can come in many forms. And one form of introspection of course is to analyze and review and see why. Here introspection is, we are just checking the quality of attention. We're not introspecting, why is this anger coming up? Where is it coming from? I mean, of course, in other contexts, this could be a valid form of introspection, and it is, particularly in the Vipassana style of practice to really get to the source of things. But here, introspection is, we're simply introspecting the quality of our attention. That's all. We are just monitoring the quality of attention. We're not monitoring, why am I getting jealous now? Where is that coming from? What should I do with that? That's not relevant here. Of course, in other contexts, very relevant. But here, we are simply monitoring the quality of our attention, monitoring whether or not we're becoming dull or distracted. So that's the limit of our introspective or vigilance in this. And when we notice that we're starting to fall to dullness or distraction, then we need to repair that. And just to follow on that, we can look in the chart. The fourth fault is non-application. So non-application means that our introspection has noticed that we're actually becoming dull or distracted, but we don't do anything about it. That's non-application. So of course the antidote to that is application, which means apply a remedy, fix the problem in this way. You know, if you're becoming dull, arouse the focus. If you're becoming distracted, release it and come back. So that is what it means by application. It means to fix the problem once you've noticed it. Then actually there's one more fault called over-application. As a beginner, that's usually not such a big problem, because we tend to generally have a lot of imbalances. We need to keep fixing our mind. We need to keep sharpening if it's dull. We need to come back and relax if it's distracted. Over-application becomes more of an issue as we develop in our practice. Over-application means that we are actually focused on the object quite well, but we're still adjusting our focus unnecessarily. That's what over-application means, is that we're focusing well, but somehow we're still adjusting our focus when we don't need to. So, of course, the antidote to that is equanimity. So here, this equanimity, this word equanimity in this context simply means balance, means leave it in its balanced way. Don't do anything. So this is the fifth fault, over-application. So, of course, here the catchphrase is, if it's not broken, don't fix it. Just leave it. Leave it alone. So these are the faults and antidotes. So, yes, any more questions? Yeah.
If you say refresh, what exactly do you mean? Yeah. So here, one, not the only one. I mean, we can have dullness because we didn't get enough sleep and we're tired. We can have dullness because we just ate a big meal and all the blood's going to the stomach and we're just no in the brain. We can be dull because our posture is not very good. We can be dull because we're trying to meditate too long. There are many reasons. But in the beginning phase, particularly in shamatha practice, one of the main reasons we get dull is we're just simply bored. We're just not interested in the practice. So, therefore, if that's the case, then we need to refresh our interest in the practice. We need to understand that this practice is not about getting some little blissful experience. It's about developing a calm, clear, focused mind, which is going to bring us enormous benefits in our life. And so, therefore, to refresh our interest in the practice. It's the same thing like, you know, if we're at home and there's something on the TV and it's not very interesting, we tend to get very bored with it and we get very dull and we just sometimes nod off in front of the TV. But if there's something very interesting on the TV, that doesn't happen normally, does it? We're sort of glued to the TV. Even though we may be actually quite tired, we're still absorbed in that because we see interest in that TV program that's going to give us something. So this is what this is here, is to really have that refresh our interest in the practice, understanding this practice is going to give us enormous benefit. Anything else?
So in a sense it's equivalent to your first point, which is faith.
Yeah, so this is what to do in the middle of the meditation if we get dull and we notice it because we lost interest. Of course, this other antidote here is also in general, it's good to then look at the benefits and remind ourselves of the benefits of the practice outside of the meditation as well. Yes. Okay. What I'd like to do now then is look at the breath practice at the nostrils, because this is something that is very widely practiced in many traditions, and often this creates a lot of difficulty for many of us for a number of reasons. One, of course, is that the area at the entrance of the nostrils, and when I say the entrance of the nostrils, you can be anywhere in this area. Some people find it easier to focus on the area above the upper lip. Some people find it easier to focus at the actual entrance of the nostrils. So wherever you notice the sensations more clearly, you can focus that. But anywhere in this area here. Because it's a much smaller area of focus, then often people find it quite difficult because our minds are really quite dull or agitated and distracted. So many people in the beginning phase find they don't notice any sensations here at all. And of course, then they think, oh, I'm not trying hard enough. I have to do more hard. I have to focus more hard. And then, of course, that's where often then people get a lot of sensations across the forehead, and then they get headaches, stiff neck, and they think, well, I can't do this because it just gives me a lot of pain in my head, because that's just symptomatic of too tight, too tense. So particularly with this practice, we're elevating the focus to this area, then we have to be very careful to avoid any tightness or tension. Because particularly if we do this practice, and we're doing this in a sustained way, maybe in a retreat setting, and we're adopting this tight focus hour after hour after hour, day after day after day, we're developing a very strong bad habit that's going to be very difficult to undo. And we're going to get a lot of tension, and sometimes we can end up with a condition which often called in Tibetan Buddhism is called lung. Lung means wind, means like an imbalance in the subtle wind energies in our body. And this is something, particularly in our modern society, people who do a lot of meditation unfortunately end up with this condition of lung because they're just too tight, too tense, they're just pushing too hard. So we really want to avoid this in this practice. So particularly focusing in the area of the nostrils, we need to really make sure we're emphasizing the relaxation, relaxation, relaxation. One way to check that is check the muscles around the eyes. Usually when we tense, our muscles here around the eyes become very tense. So every so often, just monitor that. And if you notice any tension across here around the eyes, just relax, 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 relax. And if you find you can't release the tension, don't stay there. Rather, go back to the abdomen or full body and just work with relaxation. So this is something quite important in this practice here of focusing on the nostrils. There's another big benefit with the nostrils practice, and that's a benefit that probably only this has out of all of the shamatha practices, and that is that there's this sort of biofeedback loop happening. And you may have noticed that already if you've been using this as an object. You may have noticed that by focusing here, if our focus starts to become very good, then our mind settles down, our breathing settles down, and our breathing becomes very soft, very subtle. And of course, the more soft and subtle the breath becomes, the more subtle the sensations here, which forces us to become more and more clear. So that actually helps improve the clarity. But equally well, if our mind starts to become a bit agitated, then our breathing usually gets more rough. The sensations here are easier to detect, therefore helping us to avoid distraction. So we have this biofeedback loop that helps us to improve clarity and helps us to avoid distraction as well. One more thing I'd like to mention about this practice, and then we'll go back and do this practice before we take a morning tea break. And that is, in terms of stability of attention, in the beginning phases, there are a few things we can do to help us to improve stability. And one of them that's often recommended is counting the breath. Because often we get caught up in a lot of mental chit-chat and we get distracted. So by counting the breath, we're occupying our mind in a conceptual way related to our practice. So therefore, it's harder to get caught up in other distractive thoughts if we're occupying our mind a little bit with counting. So with counting, what we do is at the end of the in-breath, we mentally note one. Then we focus on the sensations of the breath during the out-breath and following in-breath, and then mentally note two, and then so on. And we can do that counting, we can continue counting, or sometimes recommended, we count up to 10, and then we go back to 1. And if we ever lose track of where we are in our count, then we simply go back to 1. So we're going to introduce a little bit of counting in this meditation. With counting, we need to make sure, of course, that the main object is still the sensations of the breath. We're not turning this practice into mindfulness of counting. So counting is just a little bit of a thing we do very briefly at the end of every in-breath. For the rest of the whole cycle of in-breath, out-breath, we're focusing on the sensation. So that's still the main object. We're just occupying the mind a little bit with counting to help us avoid getting caught up in other distractive thoughts. Some people find it very helpful. Other people from the very beginning find counting doesn't really work. It's just unnecessary distraction. So it's good to experiment with it. And if you find it helpful in the beginning phases to stabilize the mind, use it. If you don't find it helpful, leave it out. Some traditions, instead of employing counting, they do what's called noting. So noting the breath. Instead of mentally counting, they would mentally note breathing out, breathing in, or just out, in, so forth. That's okay as well. With noting, though, like counting, you have to keep it very simple. Otherwise, it can just come into commentary. Now I'm breathing out, but this time actually is very long. Why is it so long this time? It didn't used to be like that. Then it's just distraction. So if you prefer to use noting, then very brief, just like in, out, or breathing in, breathing out. Don't do any more than that. Otherwise, you just get caught up in commentary. So that's what we're going to do in this meditation, is we are going to focus on the sensations of the breath in the area of the abdomen, the nostrils rather, and then a little bit into it, we'll introduce a little bit of counting so you can experiment with that. Before we begin that, any questions on that practice? Is that clear? Yeah. Yeah. So what we can do then, of course, is simply stay here in that area and be patient. If we find that we're trying to do that, because the thing is, when people notice, they don't notice anything here, they get frustrated. If we get frustrated, there's less chance of noticing anything here. So the trick is to really just be patient and just stay there. Just stay there. Of course, if we've done that quite a number of meditations and we don't really register anything, then maybe it's good to go back and work at the area of the abdomen to really relax and stabilize the mind a little bit. Work with that for some days, weeks, months or longer. Then maybe later we can go back to the nostrils. But the main point here is that if we don't notice much, don't get frustrated or upset, because that's just going to make it more difficult to notice. Just stay relaxed and calm and go, okay, I'll just stay here. Okay? Right, so let's do this meditation and then we'll take a morning tea break. So again, we'll do probably about 15-20 minute meditation, and I'll start and end with the bell here. Okay? So finding a nice comfortable posture. So again, letting go of any external distractions. And simply allow your awareness to descend into your body. Simply becoming aware of sensations throughout your body. And if you notice any area of tightness or tension in any part of the body, then use the out-breath to relax and release that tightness or tension to the best of your ability. And then bring your awareness to the area of your face, softening and relaxing all the muscles in the face. The mouth and jaw, soft and relaxed. The forehead, open and spacious. And all the muscles around the eyes, soft and relaxed. In this way, allowing the entire body to become completely relaxed, completely at ease.
and relaxing more deeply with each out-breath. And allowing the breathing to settle into its natural rhythm. Not trying to control or force or regulate the breath in any way. Simply allowing it to flow naturally, effortlessly. And with each out-breath, letting go of any thoughts that may have arisen, simply releasing them happily. And then we can prepare the mind, setting it in a state of ease and relaxation. By not dwelling in the past, not anticipating the future, simply allowing the mind to come to rest in the stillness of the present moment. Simply focusing on the sensations of the breath throughout the body, wherever you most distinctly notice sensations associated with the breath. And now narrow your focus and focus on the sensations of the breath at the entrance of the nostrils. Focusing either on the area above the upper lip or the actual entrance of the nostrils. Wherever you more easily notice the sensations associated with the breath. Allowing the breathing to flow naturally, not trying to regulate or control the breath in any way. Making sure we keep all the muscles around the eyes soft and relaxed. If you find that you're becoming agitated or distracted, then use the out-breath as an opportunity to relax, release the distraction, and very gently return to focusing on the breath. Or if you're simply finding that you're becoming dull or spaced out, then use the in-breath as an opportunity to arouse and refresh your focus on the breath. now to help stabilize the mind, to help overcome distraction, we can experiment with counting the breath. So at the end of the in-breath, mentally note one, and then follow the sensations of the breath through the following out-breath and in-breath, and then mentally note two. So this way we can count the breath, one up to ten, and then go back to one again. If at any time you lose the count, simply go back to one. So let's now experiment with counting the breath to help stabilize the mind. we can slowly finish the meditation. Does anyone have any questions about any of the three breath practices, the full body, the abdomen or nostrils, before we go for a morning tea break? Because in the next session we're going to move to the looking at the mind. So if there's any questions about the breath practice, now's the time. Otherwise, yes. Yes, but not tense. Some, yeah. Yeah. Then I think it's important to make sure we have a good posture. See, often, people look at people who have good posture, and they're often maybe even in the full lotus, not sitting on any cushions, just sitting on the floor, and they think, oh, I have to emulate that. So then they sit on the floor or sit on a thin cushion, but they're not flexible. So then they hear, oh, I have to keep my back straight. Okay, let's do that. Oh, God, that's hard work, that's hard work. I need to relax. And then we go like this. So we need to make sure that if we're quite stiff in the hips and so forth, that we have enough cushions, that we're sitting on enough cushions so that our back is more naturally straight. Otherwise, we're just going to continually be straining it to keep it straight because of the stiffness in our joints. So if you're in a chair, then of course it makes it a bit easier. But when we're sitting in a chair, I think often chairs are not really designed for that sort of sitting the back straight. Rather, we end up slouching in the chair. So if you want to sit in a chair, then it's good to have maybe put in a cushion in the chair so that the back of the chair is more straight and it's not sort of the natural sort of relaxed like this. So yes, with the chair you may need to adjust the way of the base of the chair and the back of the chair so that you can have that natural straight back. And also sitting in a posture on a cushion, have enough cushion so that the back is naturally straight. If you're finding that you always end up like this and you're always going like this, it's a sure sign we're not sitting on enough cushions on the floor. And again, with the chair, make sure it's adjusted so that it has a nice straight form for the back. Okay?
The other point is that you keep saying, watch the breath
type of body. So this is the full body practice. So if we find that we really just want to emphasize relaxation, then we can simply notice sensations anywhere in the body associated with the breath. So when we breathe, of course, there's a rising and lowering in the abdomen. Also, there's probably a movement of the chest area. So anything in this area, any sensations you notice that are associated with the breath, just sort of notice that in a very generic, general way, emphasizing relaxation. So also, at the beginning of each meditation, it's good to start there for a couple of minutes to make sure that we're nice and relaxed before we move on to maybe focusing on the nostrils. And what you can also do is that if you are normally focusing on the nostrils, but then in a particular meditation you find that you're really agitated and tense in the body and the mind and you can't release it, then don't stay here, but rather go back for a few minutes focusing on the full body, working on relaxation, and then go back here. So you can use that as a sort of like a backstop, a way of going to if you need to, if you find a lot of tension. So you can do that as well. Okay?
That means you not look at sensations in the rest of your body.
Not in this case. I mean, of course, there are certain meditations where we're just simply noticing sensations in the complete body. Like we did right at the beginning of the meditation, to prepare the body, we need to make sure the entire body's relaxed. So then we can scan the body and notice if there's any tension in the back of the neck or the head or the anywhere. So that's for the purpose of then releasing any tension. But in the breath practice, we are focusing on sensations associated with the breath only. Okay, let's stop there and have a morning tea break. So we've got about 20 minutes to tea break, and we'll come back at 11:45, and I'll sound this bell again when we're going to start. So 20-minute tea break.